Our next topic, Mel Gibson, driving so drunk that night.
First of all, I want to thank Mel.
Yeah.
He was arrested and certainly took a certain amount of focus. But for me, it was a moment of
whew. What do you mean?
Just like there, but for the grace of God, you know.
You out of control like that?
Maybe. Yeah.
A lot of people have said, is the person who said those things...
The same person?
Drunk. Responsible. I mean, are they the same? Are you yourself?
No, when
you...
That's another side of yourself that even you don't know. And I would say that, and he said afterwards, you know, he's repentant and said all those things. I wasn't there. It's like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Jack Daniels. There is another person who appears.
But a lot of people out here have said, don't work with him.
Don't work with him. But also a lot of people say, if his next movie makes money, they'll somehow work with him. You know, you can do that. We'll do The Passion on Ice.
Probably sounds to people like that was like a bit you were planning, but that trust me, is sitting across from him, that burp just slipped out.
That wasn't
part of what was going on there to be funny.
Nope.
It was just something that happened for real in real life just then.
Yep.
Back on this beer kick, it's you really are a lot more gassy than you have been for a while.
Oh, you gotta be.
And what's bringing this about? The
just
stock of beer?
I don't feel safe pounding whiskeys all night and then driving in quarantine times, because the cops can pull you over for anything.
Well, I feel like I would feel more safe now because everybody's carrying diseases. Cops not going to want to pull you over. Like, if they can think of any excuse not to pull you over, I wouldn't be pulling you over if I was a cop.
I guess it's just, you know, with beer, I know my limits.
You never know what you're driving into. I've seen you pass your limits on beer before.
Oh, it's capable. Yeah, sure. It's possible.
Absolutely.
Anything's possible when you got a little...
Some might even say probable.
A little heart, a little dream.
Joie de vivre, which I think is French for addiction to alcohol.
Joie de vivre. He was in that movie with Billy Crystal's, right?
George Mirasant? Is that who we're
thinking? That's a good movie,
thinking
too,
about
huh?
My Giants?
Huh? Yeah.
What other Billy Crystal movies would you know I'm trying to think of right now?
The one with Gerard Depardieu.
He was in a movie with Gerard Depardieu?
Wasn't he?
I don't know. The only Gerard Depardieu movie I can think of is My Father the Hero and Green Card. I think that one had Andy McDowell.
Oh, yeah. He
big Andy McDowell fan.
Doug's wife?
She's always really gotten on my nerves for some reason. I don't know why.
You're talking about Doug's wife?
Wait, no. Who's Doug's wife?
We talked from Multiplicity.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the King of Queens there for a second.
I'm happy that you know that Kevin James's name is Doug Heffernan.
Because usually you're talking about the King of Queens, and I'm like, what? No, Andy McDowell wasn't Kevin James' wife.
That's Leah Remini.
It was that Scientology bitch.
She's out of that now.
Yeah, I know. I saw a couple interviews with her. It's nice to see the fog come from out over her eyes and her just talking like a human being again.
That's good.
It's like a throwback to the days where she was working at the beach club back in the mid-90s.
I like where you're going.
Back to when I originally had a crush on her.
Yep.
I think of all the, we can't get Tiffany Amber Thiessen on the show this season replacements they tried on Saved by the Bell, she was my favorite, I think.
I like that Joey girl.
The one with the rebel with was her name Joey?
Or wasn't it?
Joey, I'm not angry anymore.
I think you're confusing her with Uncle Joey is what's happening, quite frankly.
Look, guys, I know you care about me, but I'm doing the right thing. There comes a time in every man's life where he's just got to face the music and say to himself, hey, I'm a failure.
You know that song's about Uncle Joey.
I always heard that.
Alanis Morissette wrote it about him when she was in Concrete Blonde.
I was going to say, I didn't know that Morissette was writing songs for other people.
Yeah.
Every once in a while you come across that.
That's how she got her start.
Somebody who's just like a prolific songwriter. You never knew. Like, they've just been writing things for other artists for years and years.
She wrote Joey for Concrete Blonde when she was 15, much in the same way that old girl wrote,
during her break in
Will
between
You Still Love Me Tomorrow?
Seasons of You Can't Do That on Television.
Correct.
She sold some songs to Concrete Blonde. And
you know that line cook.
She was off to the races.
That line cook touched her.
Barf?
That's the one.
She got molested by Barf?
I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah, there's probably a couple of tracks on Jagged Little Pill about that guy then, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And not one of us has died of food poisoning yet. Amazing.
Gee, thanks, kids. This is the happiest day of my life. And I want each of you to have a piece of my special cake.
Interesting green icing, Murphy. What flavor is it?
No, it's not a flavor. That's moldy fungus. I prepared this cake 10 years ago. And just for such a special occasion. Pry this apart there. Oh, oh. There's an ant farm in there. I'll save this. I'll save my mixture for the 20th anniversary.
That was a lot of why Nickelodeon was successful at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. At the very beginning, all it was like Canadian children's programming they were getting for free, mixed with like weird Danish cartoons that were poorly dubbed over in English.
Oh, is that the gnome?
Yeah, that's one of them.
Did you watch that one?
I mean, begrudgingly, I hated it when I was a kid, but you know, it was the 80s, so you couldn't stop watching TV.
I want to watch David the Gnome all the way through, because supposedly it has one of the saddest endings in all of television history.
I kind of remember something like that. Like, his wife dies or something, and then they, like, turn into mushrooms, I vaguely remember.
That's a
and
sad
I don't know.
Story.
It's something like that. It's something along those lines. But I remember just having a vague sense of, like, all these cartoons being weird when I was a little kid, not knowing why. Yeah. And then, like, you look back as, like, an adult, and you're like, oh, it's because they came from foreign lands.
Yeah.
That's why. They were just tricking me into thinking they were American, like apple pie.
These were the only Canadian television shows and cartoons from that are Danish that we could find that don't have nudity. So we'll just show them, I guess, you know?
I saw a little gif today of you familiar with the Tom Hanks, Daryl Hannah vehicle Splash?
Yeah, he had the Corona.
Okay, yeah. So they've added Splash to the Disney Plus. And there is that famous scene where Daryl Hannah gives old Tom Hanks a smooch on the cheek, and then she runs and dives in the ocean, and you can see her butt.
Yeah,
because
she's naked. Show her butt.
She's a
mermaid
now, but for the Disney Plus, they've now digitally made her hair go down to her knees in that scene only.
Oh,
so
no.
He covers her butt, because I guess having a butt on Disney Plus would would just rot children's minds. So, like, there's just this one scene where randomly she just has, like, Tangled-esque computer hair, like, very obviously, very awkwardly flowing behind her as she runs into the... This is a sad state of affairs over there at Disney.
Can't
They're just overthinking everything.
You're editing The Simpsons.
Like, they still haven't gotten around to releasing a box set of the not-fucked-with Star Wars movies that everybody's wanted for 30 years, but... They're fucking micromanaging butt cheeks
on
40-year-old movies.
Something about the rights for that Star Wars thing.
Rights, schmites. Disney's
that's not
got
happen
quaffers
for
of like $400 billion.
That's true.
Money talks. They could get the rights to fucking anything.
That's true.
I mean, 20th Century Fox, they own them now. What else could have the rights? That's who released those things originally.
20th Century Fox. That's what
that song
is. I'd
say that's
about.
One of my top three Doors songs.
Yeah.
Where would you rank it in the Doors discography?
You know, I'm not a big fan of the Doors oeuvre. I would rank that amongst all the other Doors songs that sound the same to me.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying they're all tied for number one. Can't choose, can't kill one of your darlings?
Look, I was in a band and we were assholes. And when we were at our assholiest,
pick your favorite four Doors songs. We're going to call it your Mount Densmore. What is your Mount Densmore?
A lot of people would be like, you guys sound like the Doors. And it was like, well, they must not have tried hard.
Who must not have? The Doors,
the Doors.
Or this person?
The Doors must not have.
I think that's from player to player. It was clearly... Ray Manzarek was trying far too hard.
Oh, okay.
Because he was, you know, reinventing his look and whatnot every other week. Jim Morrison was not trying hard at all. He was just, you know, drunk all the time.
Right. Actually, and that was a lot of my
I was going to say, you were very Morrison-esque. I think this is all just sour grapes here because man got famous for basically doing the same thing you did.
Yeah. He just had the...
tearing apart his bandmates' hopes and dreams through drunken, disorderly shenanigans.
He was just lucky enough to be born first, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's...
you know?
How it goes in the grand scheme of things.
I never had the leather pants, but if I did, buddy, whew.
If you ever had a pair of leather pants, oh, man, we would have eventually thrown them away. Like, we threw away my good friend Shane Mailing's denim schpants that he wore all from high school until... one year, we literally held him down and cut them up with scissors while he was wearing them just to get rid of them.
What did he think about that?
He was not happy about it, but he knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Literally every single day for like 2 years, it was the only pair of pants he wore, Matt.
That's dedication.
And he was dating our good friend Tracy at the time.
That's not surprising.
She was signing off on that.
Yeah. I mean, I came late to the party meeting her and like it was like, wow. Lovely girl, but it all makes sense.
Seems like she's got a head on her shoulders until I meet any of the men she's ever been involved with.
Correct.
That's a story I can attach to a lot of women I know. I guess let's not go shooting personal arrows here on the podcast.
That's what we've been saying here on Baby Oil and Blow for the run of the show. That's... women are crazy, man.
True that. If we've got one mantra on this show, it's stay single.
Yeah.
We've got like a 1B. It's bitches be crazy.
Our other mantra is chicks be bugging, man.
It's true.
Put it all over our stuff.
If we had a 3, we don't. But if we did, it would be we don't die, we multiply.
Well, duh. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the Baby Oil and Blow Army out there. I don't know.
We call them Bebe's Kids.
Bebe's Kids.
Fans of the podcast.
Bebe Oils and Blows.
A.K.A. Bebe's Kids.
I like it. It's Baby Oil and Blow. We are your hosts. I am one half of the hosting group. I am the Tone Loc baby.
Oh, wow.
With me, as always, is the fat old black guy that drove the car and I think might have been their dad.
Okay.
Nate Adams. Unpack that. Go ahead.
I was trying to think. Robin something was the comedian's name. The movie itself was taken off of a lot of his stand-up, which was built around the idea of Bebe's Kids. And no, he was not their father. His stand-up was built around...
oh, he's dating
all
girl,
the single women or single mothers that he's got to date. As a modern man, you're not going to find a woman who doesn't have kids from previous relationships. Yeah. You're always dealing with these Bebe's Kids and...
right.
As a single man in his late 30s, man, can I relate?
Was it
my kingdom for a woman who doesn't have some rugrats?
Was it Faison? Who was it? Oh, Robin Harris.
Robin Harris.
Yeah, he played himself.
I think he died of drugs, tragically, soon after Bebe's Kids came out.
Now that we're...
we did introduce the podcast right past that.
Yeah.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. Yeah, I think I got confused.
Now that we're done talking about Bebe's Kids, want to talk about some gringos?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just to catch everybody up here, we are still in our Easter / spring month here. Easter is over.
How'd you celebrate Mel Gibson's day yesterday?
Oh, I celebrated by just not getting dressed and not leaving the house all day because I had a very, very trying Easter weekend leading up to that. My mother came by and brought me some like to-go quarantine Easter dinner. She made a big deal about doing it. Like, you know, we're all under quarantine, so we can't have an Easter dinner, so I'm going to... I was like, oh, that's very nice and thoughtful, except that we've never had an Easter dinner ever, and now you're just making up excuses to, like, come over to my house once a day now, because there's literally nothing else in the world you can focus on, so I'm just taking the brunt of, like, all this motherly attention that's really...
you know,
ground me
that.
Down to a fucking nub.
Right.
At this point, I'm just ground down to a fucking nub.
What'd she bring you?
I need a Seinfeld buffer zone, Matt, is what I need. I need to send that bitch down to Florida or something.
Boca Vista.
We're dealing with white people here, so we had a nice white person ham. We had some, like, roast beef, some roast beast. There was some garlic mash going on in there.
You missed out.
I missed out.
I offered up that lamb.
Yeah, I was...
it was phenomenal.
Not coming over to your house and eating a lamb yesterday.
It was... 5 stars.
Glad that worked out for you. I was very happy to not be a human being. I slept till like 5 in the evening.
Yes, you did. I was getting concerned by your lack of response.
Well, it was the first sleep I'd had in a number of days, and then
that's nice.
You multiply that with like the sales records I'm breaking because everybody is just bug shit crazy and looking for excuses to leave the house.
Your pizza selling
my pizza place
master.
Is fucking booming right now.
Yeah.
Everybody else is withering on the vine. Meanwhile, I'm Scrooge McDucking around in pizza money right now.
Yeah, and you've all those crazy publicity stunts that we've been doing for your pizza place are paying off.
Yeah, finally. I mean, there was a couple that, you know, almost got a shut down, and it was looking like it maybe wasn't a good plan, but it's come back around.
Like
come
when,
back around.
When we tried to launch Pizza Sluts, where we just had topless women delivering pizzas.
Yeah, to be continued on that idea, because I think I might have a couple tweaks to it that could make it work this time. Matt, it's Easter month, it's spring month, makes you think of Jesus, you think of Mel Gibson, so in case this is your first episode, we are talking about Mel Gibson all month long. This is the resurrection of Mel Gibson, where we're watching 4 post-racist meltdown movies that Mel Gibson made in the latter part of his career, and we're sort of assessing them and deciding whether it's time that America should embrace Mel Gibson again and, you know, make him, build him back up to being the star he was.
Nate, I got stoned and watched Passion of the Christ yesterday.
Seriously?
No, that should've sounds
watched,
terrible.
Should've watched Apocalypto.
Like, could you imagine just getting baked and then trying to, like, read all that fucking Aramaic?
Oh, yeah, I went to college. I can handle
for
that.
3 years?
That's
basically, or 3 hours?
Did it for, like, 4 years. It's no problem whatsoever.
No one likes an overachiever.
But yeah, no, nobody wants to watch Passion of the Christ on Easter. It's supposed to be a celebration. Yeah. Come on, that's a fucking downer right there.
That's why we're celebrating.
This
here.
Is week 2. Last week, we watched Edge of Darkness. Mm-hmm. Moving on to the next one he made a couple years later here. Let's get into the rundown. This week, the rundown is being brought to us by the nerds in Silicon Valley. The great work they've been doing creating fast food apps. Something that I really jumped on recently.
You've been getting some DoorDash?
Poo-pooing the idea of fast food. Specifically, like, individual companies' apps.
Okay.
Like, there's some... Of course, there's the Domino's Pizza Tracker, which is just
we
one
like
of the
Domino's.
Greatest inventions ever. You know,
get
down to the minute
thin,
what's going on with your
crusts.
Order. But also, McDonald's is doing good shit. Where
Are
you
they?
Can just, like... Put in an order and then go to a specified parking spot and then they just bring it out to you.
Did you do
that?
You
don't got to get in the line. I've done it. You don't got to
really?
Talk to anybody other than at the very end when they hand food through to you.
Huh.
The Taco Bell app I'm really appreciating because Taco Bell's like one of these chains that I've always been kind of skittish when it comes to exploring the menu. Because you don't ever really know what they're squirting in each
That's
one of
fair.
These things. And I can be particular with my condiments, you know? So it's
I don't
like,
want sour cream on shit.
Well, that idea, that vague, crunchy, wrap, cheesy thing sounds good, but I don't actually know what's
in there. Yeah.
When you're in the app, it shows you got a list of it. And if there's one thing in there that you're like, I don't want that squirted in there, don't do that gun. Boom. One press of a button and it's gone.
You're
not having
that.
Long conversations with anybody. You're not potentially confusing these minimum wage workers any further.
Yeah. You
Fast
tried that,
food apps. I'm on board.
Try that beefy Frito burrito thing.
That beefy Frito burrito's killer.
Oh, it's $1.
Definitely tried it.
No nonsense in it.
Find it like you get one of these like these wraps or these grillers, these burrito type things.
Yeah.
They're like generally like $1. You pay a couple more cents to like double up the protein on there.
Yeah.
You got something substantial for like $1.50.
That's a really good idea.
Right there in your hand.
Damn.
You got that app. One
That's
button.
A life hack.
Double up the proteins right there.
Damn.
This is where the app's coming into play, my man.
Man, you really, I'd like to subscribe to your newsletter.
I got a whole folder of fast food apps going on my phone right now. It's a new age.
Nice.
The rundown is of 2012's Get the Gringo. This week, we were supposed to watch this one.
Yeah, so I rewatched it.
You rewatched it?
No,
it's double homework.
Not.
It's
no,
crazy.
I'm not that dedicated.
I did flirt with the idea of not watching it and letting you pull us through here, but I did. You'll be happy to know, though, that it was very late, and I was half drunk when I watched it, so wasn't paying a whole lot of attention
to it. I mean,
just
assume we're always half drunk when we're watching
these. I guess
these.
That's fair, although over the past week, I have only been drunk once. It's maybe the most sober I've been in, like, 10 years.
Because you got into that Tool song, Sober?
No, I didn't know that was... Oh, yeah, I remember
Working
that.
Working with the...
You want during the break to just like rock out to some Tool in my living room and then maybe come back and do the second half of the podcast?
I usually do anyways, but you're invited to attend this time.
Awesome. The runtime of Get the Gringo is a very respectable 96 minutes.
In
easy
and out.
Breezy. The budget, this one's kind of a mystery. I did not find any information anywhere. What this thing cost to make. The gross also...
Made in Mexico. It's hard to say.
Also kind of a mystery because there was no real domestic release. It played at like 10 theaters and just like sort of an old school traveling way where like Gibson was just taking a print around and doing Q&As. But then other than that, no one would release it because they still all hated Mel Gibson in America.
I'm Mel Gibson.
Maybe overseas,
like
it did
watch
make
my movie.
Some money, but like I saw like five million something. I saw like 8 million something. There's conflicting depending on what
I
you
could
look
see
at.
Like China really being into Mel Gibson still.
China maybe made this thing a little bit of, I don't know, this thing definitely cost more than $8 million to make. I'm going to say this is a huge fucking disaster probably.
Is Jet Li Chinese or Japanese?
He's from Laos. Director here is Adrian Grunberg, who is like a Mel Gibson acolyte. He's like his little right hand, I think. Some assistant directing for him on The Apocalypto.
Oh, he sits at the right hand of the Bloodfather?
That's right. Since Get the Gringo, he has helmed another film, that new Rambo Last Blood, which I still haven't seen.
On Amazon Prime right now.
I did see that it got added to Amazon Prime, so I think I will finally take
the
plunge.
I keep looking at it, being like, I'm going to have to watch it.
Yeah, that's for sure. The stars of this movie, of course, are Mel Gibson. He is the reason for the season.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing the character of Driver, which I assume is some sort of homage to the Walter Hill movie.
He's the Gringo.
Just calling him Driver. Yeah, you'd think he would just be named the Gringo. Although I guess this movie was not named Get the Gringo until like very late in its release. They were trying to...
Like My Mexican
What I Did on My Summer Vacation
something.
Is what they were trying to call it, which is just ridiculous and has nothing to do with this movie. It's a terrible title. I don't know. I think it was released overseas, is that? And it wasn't until like it got dropped on VOD here to where they finally called it something else because they were like, it's just not descriptive of what this movie is whatsoever. That's a really dumb idea. Along here, we've got Kevin Ballmer, who is listed as Kevin Hernandez when doing this film, which I don't know.
Play it up, dog.
Were they just like, hey, you're a brown kid? Like, we need to give you something that sounds more Mexican for your acting career? Is
Nate,
that going on here?
He was in the hit television show, Surviving Jack.
Not familiar.
Which lasted 8 episodes sitcom? On Fox, starring Christopher Maloney.
Okay.
As a over-aggressive cardiovascular doctor father.
Hmm.
Who is very hard on his kids,
doesn't
but in a loving way.
Doesn't sound entertaining at all.
Oh, it was hilarious.
Also, they should have got Mel Gibson to play that role.
Well,
abusive dad, he would have been great as that.
He wasn't abusive. He was just, you know, he was a Vietnam vet, man.
Does he have some sort of tattoo to let you know for sure that he was? Because, once again, this just sounded like a Mel Gibson role.
Have you seen Christopher Maloney not have tattoos and roles?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's playing the kid in this movie. The kid also has a mom, the kid's mom. We're not being very creative with our character names here. She was played by Dolores Heredia. She's probably from a bunch of telenovelas or something. I don't
Mulva?
Know. Looked at her. It rhymes with Ethiopian. Spanish language shit. I don't know what any of it is. Speaking of, Daniel Jimenez Cacho is playing Javi, the crime boss of this jail that Mel Gibson's in.
Yeah.
Also in a bunch of Spanish language shit. These people are probably famous actors in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
Not here in America.
I don't know what's happening. It seems our profits have dropped 37%.
I'm afraid we have a bad image, sir. Market research shows people see you as something of an ogre.
I ought to club them and eat their bones.
Well, maybe this film festival could help us. A film biography might let them get to know the real you. Virtuous, heroic, nubile.
You left out Pleasant. But I like that film biography idea. A slick Hollywood picture to gloss over my evil rise to power like Bugsy or Working Girl. Get me Steven Spielberg.
He's unavailable.
Then get me his non-union Mexican equivalent.
Coming up the rear, I just want to mention that Peter Stormare is playing Frank, the crime boss that Mel Gibson steals $4 million from. Want to mention him, not because he's got a big role in this movie, but just because Peter Stormare is awesome. He, of course, fed Steve Buscemi into that wood chipper in Fargo.
When do we go to Pancake's house?
That's right. Tagline of Get the Gringo: the odds are against him, so is everyone else. Which I think is a little bit of a meta thing about how, like, Mel Gibson versus the world right here. Yeah. Like, y'all aren't gonna let him back into Hollywood, but he's gonna make his way in kicking and screaming. You just wait.
Listen, Senior Spielbergo, I want you to do for me what Spielberg did for Oscar Schindler.
Schindler es bueno. Señor Burns es el diablo.
Listen, Spielbergo, Schindler and I are like peas in a pod. We're both factory owners. We both made shells for the Nazis, but mine worked, damn it. Now go out there and win me that festival.
Plot here. A career criminal, nabbed by Mexican authorities, is placed in a tough prison where he learns to survive with the help of a 9-year-old boy. That's it. Very simple plot synopsis.
It's accurate, but
I mean, yeah,
makes it sound
intriguing.
Like a completely different movie.
It's not
movie.
Giving anything away, but it does sort of sound like a different movie. This is no Cop and a Half. Well, it does delve in Cop and a Half territories.
You like that Cop and a Half movie.
Love it.
I'm your worst nightmare. An 8-year-old with a badge.
Matt, let's get into the bullet points here. Let's get into these dusty notes, probably, that you took a week ago. If you want to blow the dust off your phone screen there so you can read them. That's all in that
steel trap, buddy.
You got
I don't lose
there.
Anything.
This is perhaps going to be a disaster of a bullet points, but we'll see how it plays out as we get into it.
So the first note I got.
Okay.
The movie opens up. He's trying to get back with this estranged daughter, all right?
Oh, no. Man, that's not what this movie's about at all.
What's going on?
Did you watch Edge of Darkness?
Oh, motherfucker. It turns out I had the right notes all along.
The first thing I noticed was that we got that Icon Productions logo, and the pre-fucking things are coming in, and it's got, like, the face, like the Greek face, and I'm like, what's Icon Productions? I sort of remember this existing in the 90s.
Is that Mel Gibson's?
Sort of looks like the Jerry Bruckheimer thing, but
production
it wasn't
company?
Yeah, I Googled it, and I was like, oh, of course, that's just Mel Gibson's production company.
Yeah.
This appeared before every Mel Gibson
Patriot,
movie ever.
Braveheart.
Absolutely nothing
Babe
else.
Babe 2, Pig in the City.
There you go. Does he voice the pig in that one?
No, he just, I think any Oscar he didn't win that year was because Babe, Pig in the City took it.
Son of a bitchin' little pig.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a Mel Gibson joint from top to bottom. He produced it. He handpicked his crony as a director. He cast himself as the fucking lead. He co-wrote it. This is clearly just Mel Gibson being like, I'm sick of not being a celebrity anymore.
I've still got it, dog.
You people are going to let me star in movies again if it's the fucking last thing you do.
Yeah.
Somebody else is going to fuck up more than me, and then I'm going to sneak my way in. Bill Cosby, I'm looking at you, man.
Yeah, so many people have. It's time you all forgive Mel Gibson.
I don't know. I did kind of go back and listen to some of those recordings of him screaming at his wife.
Yeah, they're still funny.
He does drop some hard N-words. You were right about that.
Yeah,
I forgot that point.
Yeah.
Sort of making me second guess this whole give Mel Gibson another chance a little bit. Yeah. A little bit. Maybe I'm on the fence right now. We'll see how it goes as this month develops.
We'll see how much I like these movies.
Take some hard stance in those recordings.
he picks a lane. He's dedicated.
That's true.
There's something to be said about that.
That's true.
Boy. We got a car chase here, pal.
Starts off in media res, which I think is Latin for with a car chase.
Yeah. It's, hey, dog, car chase. I don't know.
I didn't know they called people dog back then.
At two dog? Yeah, they said that shit all the time.
So, yeah, we got Mel Gibson and a guy dressed as a clown. They're in a car out in the desert getting chased by some cops.
They're both dressed like clowns.
Pretty extreme shit. And then one of the first, Mel Gibson doesn't have the actual clown mask on anymore because the movie wants you to be like, hey, that's Mel Gibson.
Yeah, he takes it off real fast.
But yeah, it's just, also he's talking to us, like, and I realized, like, it's one of these things that they were doing a ton back in this period where every movie would, like, start with something crazy, then it'd be like, narrative voiceover, record scratch.
You're probably wondering how I got here.
You're wondering how I got in this situation. And I was like, that's corny as fuck. Like, you're not starting off on a good foot with me, Get the Gringo, doing a cliched ass bet you're wondering how I got in this situation opening.
But they leave it at that and don't do the, like, 8 months earlier.
Yeah, you're not getting any more Tarantino jumping around with the timeline or anything, but generally if you got like a voiceover narration like this, unless it's like a Coen Brothers script or somebody who's like really good with a voice that I really trust as a writer, mm-hmm. I'm hating this fucking thing used in movies. Other than this initial annoyance, I didn't mind it too much in this movie, though, because just growly Mel Gibson kind of really sells it.
Yeah, he does it well.
It really sort of feels like a throwback to old hard-boiled fucking movies where you had this sort of dialogue throughout the whole thing. It's not terrible.
You bring that up, and some folks consider this to be an unofficial sequel to Payback.
I noticed that when I was putting together some things for Judgment Day. Yeah. There's nary a review you can find where somebody isn't like, you know what, I've always kind of considered this to be a spiritual sequel to Payback, which I'm a fucking number one fan of.
I do love Payback, but they're not.
I had vague memories of Payback. I saw it when it came out, liked it a lot from what I remember.
Do you want to borrow my director's cut?
I prefer the theatrical cut. I thought that they gave him some good notes.
It's all about that director's cut, bro.
Agree to disagree on
it's
that.
It's more
one.
Pulpy.
I need some of that pulp taken out. I don't want to have to floss my teeth after
you're
I watch
some
the movie.
Pulp. Yeah. Some pulp. Some pulp.
That's what I'm always getting. Go ahead. Add the vitamin D, some pulp.
They're two different armed forces veterans, so it's not the same character.
You could tell by he's got different army tattoos in each movie.
Puts it out there for you.
Yeah, another one of the early fucking red flags I'm dealing with when I'm watching this movie is this car chase ends. He's along the border wall between Mexico and the United States, which apparently existed before Trump became president. This is news to me.
Trying to figure out what this guy's done.
Blowing my mind.
Yeah.
And just the first conceit is he just randomly comes across a big hill of dirt that's shaped exactly like a ramp, conveniently sitting next to this fucking wall, so he can then ramp himself over the wall to avoid the cops. It's kind of fucking ridiculous, and I'm like, really? You want to make me take a leap of faith in the first scene of the movie, Get the Gringo?
Yeah.
You're making me have to bite my tongue and go along with you in the first fucking scene?
It's there, so we get the sweet car jump, Nate.
It is sort of a Dukes of Hazzard-esque car jump here, where he doesn't quite make it all the way over the wall, so he crashes through the wall a lot. There's some destruction. And then Matt, on the other side of the wall, we got some Mexican authorities that we're going to have to deal with for the rest of this movie.
Bad hombres.
Out of the frying pan and into the fire, if you ask me.
All right, he lands on the other side, and these Mexican cops are like, hey, American cops, like, we get it. We're lazy. We don't want to do this paperwork. You take these guys back. And the American guy's like, you're goddamn right.
We got Hank from the Breaking Bad playing the American cop here. We got another guy who's like, I think I'm going to call him like poor man's Cheech Marin playing the Mexican cop.
Yeah.
I Googled him to see like if he was somebody I knew from things. But once again, he's just only been in Spanish language things. So I didn't know who he was. And I was like, why didn't they get a Cheech Marin to play this role? I feel like he's a Cheech Marin type.
Because he would have been doing that pussy line.
Get some
again.
That's what I'm saying. Get some Cheech in this movie. You need some star power, Gibson, if you're going to draw some people back in and remind them of what a charming man you are.
Not even
draw
Cheech
him in with
Marin
Cheech.
Wouldn't touch him.
That's rough, man.
Man,
you can't get Cheech on board.
Fallen.
He was persona non grata in fucking 2012.
That's rough. But yeah, these Mexican cops, they find
Mario Zaragoza is the name of the Mexican guy.
He's a nice man.
I guess.
They find out that Gibson's got a lot of money.
I just Googled him right now. It turns out he got Me Too'd for robbing graves.
Oh.
He's 5 counts of grave robbing. They're not putting him in things anymore.
Is that part of the Me Too movement?
It is now.
Sexual assault and grave robbing. Uh-huh. These women were tired of seeing their ancestors' graves robbed.
Men in Hollywood are just fingers in all sorts of dirty pies.
So is Weinstein fingering dirty pies, or was he digging up graves?
Oh, no. He was on legit archaeological digs. He didn't get in any trouble for that aspect of his life.
At least there's something legitimate
in it. It belongs in a museum, and that actress belongs in my hotel room.
Yeah, goddamn right. Oh, gone but not forgotten.
Is he?
I don't know. I assume he's dead of COVID.
Yeah, no, I didn't read the news yet. Hoping. Fingers crossed Weinstein's dead soon.
And wishing. Mm-hmm. And doo doo. So the cops are like, "Whoa, Gibson's got a bunch of money. Let's
Right.
Let's keep them.
Yeah, they change their story real quick. They go from just take this gringo back over the border so we don't have to deal with him to, hey, he's our gringo now.
Yeah.
We're dirty Mexican cops. We're pocketing all this fucking money. We're going to go out and buy some awesome fucking shiny clothes at the swap meet.
And the American cops are like, oh, fuck you. You're dirty. And he's like, yeah, fuck you. So are you, man.
Mm-hmm.
We're all dirty cops.
That's right. We're all pigs and shit right here.
This is a dirty world. They've set it up right there, Nate. Nothing's going to be fair.
So now we enter the Mexican prison where we're spending most of the time.
El Pueblito.
Is that Mexican for the little prison?
The little village.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a prison movie, as it turns out. And we got a real unique setup going on here. We're in some sort of Mexican jail that's more of like an open-air market.
Yes.
It's literally like a little village. People's like wives and their kids are staying in the jail with them.
Correct.
We got like taco stands, storefronts, and like corner bodegas all going on in here.
Get your hair did.
Actually, quite frankly, it seems like kind of a cool place to live.
Yeah.
Like if you had a little bit of pocket money, like I don't think I'd really mind being in this place.
No.
It's a little bit like the Wild West because there's a lot of like guns going on and you can get killed, which just, if
anything,
just makes life more exciting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just fucking eating enchiladas and like looking over your shoulder to make sure you don't get shot. That sounds like a decent life to me.
I tell you what, watching this movie definitely made me want to go pick up a sixer at Tecate.
For sure. It also was making me wonder, like, all right, what is this thing? Like, does this have any basis in reality?
Yes.
Is there prisons anywhere that looks like this, or is this just
there was
shit coming out of Mel Gibson's mind?
There was, but
never been to a Mexican prison. Still on my bucket list.
El Pueblito was a real Mexican prison where they really let the families come live with the prisoners.
Wild. Just wild.
It got closed down a few years before this movie
spoilers.
Was made.
It happens in the third act.
Well, I'm just in real life.
Oh, I see.
The jail ceased to exist by the time this film was made.
I just decided that wasn't a good idea. The whole setup.
Well, we'll just keep talking about the movie and you can see what could possibly go wrong here.
So one of the first things we're seeing here is that this Gibson character, he did not just stumble into this $4 million or whatever thing he robbed. This guy's a career robber.
Oh,
he's always got robbing on his mind. He's a real coal cash grifter, if you will. So the first thing he's doing...
I thought you were more of a Gambit guy.
You know I am, but I was just giving that shout out to Ted Pepsi because I know he's a big grifter fan.
You like Gambit, you like grifter. It's one and the same.
Oh, I beg to differ, mon ami.
Oh, wow.
First we charge the car, then we blow it up.
Wow.
But first thing he's doing is he's eyeballing the place. He's saying, who's in power here? Who's got money? How am I going to climb up the ranks? He comes up with a little scheme to pocket some fucking cash.
Yeah.
By burning down a taco stand and then, like, robbing some money from the heroin shack while everybody's preoccupied with the taco shack.
He's got it all. Well, first thing he does when he gets in there
he fucking rolls a guy in a toilet.
Dude up.
Follows him into the toilet, just like... breaks his head all over the porcelain.
Yep.
Steals a gun from him. Fucking stashes the gun in the rafters of the fucking toilet.
Uh-huh.
Pockets his fucking cash. And he's like, I'm going to go get some smokes and a beer.
He steals his fancy Rolex, too.
Burn down a taco stand. He steals his fancy Rolex, which becomes sort of a little plot point later on here.
Mm-hmm.
Chekhov's Rolex we're dealing with here.
So then he's got money.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's like, well, I'm just going to... live comfortably and figure out the lay of this land.
Except enter the kid, Matt, and there's a little wrinkle getting thrown in here. It turns out there was a sassy young boy who saw him doing all this shit, and he's like, yo, Mel Gibson, probably you don't want me spilling the beans about all this shit you did, especially because it involves like the head honchos in charge of this place. They'll fucking gut you like a fish. How about you become like... my
cigarette
father
supplier.
Figure, and I won't tell anybody as long as you become my blood father. I think is the setup that they come in with here.
Figure.
So now this kid's always hitting him up for cigarettes, but it's like, yeah, this precocious little kid. I guess I'm gonna hang out with him all the time in this fucking jail. We got a movie here. We got an odd couple.
I tell you what, they got some chemistries, Nate.
They do, and we learn that this kid's He's watching people like Gibson is. He knows people. He's got the lay of the land. He's got some street smarts is what's going on here.
Gibson's like, he's an annoying little shit, but He's the only little shit around here I can trust.
They create a relationship that's much like Batman and Robin, if like Batman and Robin were criminals instead of crime fighters.
Yeah.
They're like bizarro Batman and Robin, kind of what's going on in this movie.
So he uses a gun and only believes in killing?
Yes.
Like bizarro Superman. Superman's exact opposite. Who lives in the backwards bizarro world? Up is down, down is up. He says hello when he leaves, goodbye when he arrives.
Shouldn't he say bad bye? Isn't that the opposite of goodbye?
No, it's still goodbye.
Does he live underwater?
No.
Is he black?
So he's like, hey, you know, I'm this kind of soldier in this movie, and I need you to be my eyes out there.
Kid, that's a special forces tattoo.
Little boy, look at my arms while I take off my shirt.
Yeah, we do legitimately get yet another scene in a Mel Gibson movie where he rolls up his sleeve and shows his fucking army tattoo.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, like,
he's army in this one.
This guy's going to be good at killing people, in case you were worried. He's not going to be bad at killing
in
people.
In case you were worried that Mel Gibson isn't playing a former soldier.
There's another scene in here somewhere where we meet, like, the schlubby embassy scumbag who's, like, pretending like he's going to help Gibson out of jail, but really he just wants to, like, get a cut of whatever money he came across the border with.
Yeah.
This guy's real sweaty and fat, and we're supposed to not like him.
He's pretty cool, though.
But
I liked him.
Yeah, I feel like this actor, I feel like, really pulled this off authentically. He really felt to me like a weird, just scumbag white guy that would just be randomly living down in Mexico, like getting involved in fucking shady shit.
He's got enough money to where he's at least paying to bang like high six, low sevens, which is way better than what he's doing stateside.
Oh, way better.
Yeah, so he's king of the land. He's also drinking some kind of
senoritas and margaritas.
He's also drinking some kind of alcoholic fruit beverage out of a Ziploc bag
okay,
at some point.
Yeah, that's at some point that's in my notes. He's like staking out a bar with hookers in it.
So real,
he's just got a bag with a straw in it, and maybe like some papaya juice or something in there. I've never seen anybody drink out of a bag like this. It's crazy.
We can get to it. So yeah, he's staking out because it's all about that money. He knows Gibson's got something going on more than he's saying, and Gibson's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And there's the dude knows about the money, and he's like, well, I'm gonna see who's got the money, and that's when he's staking out drinking a Ziploc.
Oh yeah,
margarita.
That's right, because the dirty cops who busted Gibson and stole the money are just spending it on hookers and blow, as you would if you had come across a couple $1 million in a fucking car. And also this becomes a little bit of a plot point too, where we're told there's $4 million by the guy who is robbed from, but everybody knows about $2 million. So there's these cops got a $2 million, and there's another missing couple million somewhere floating around out there. Gibson keeps talking about how he's got to get his money back, but he's the only one with his info. Also, another character we come across around this time is the kid's mom.
Yeah, she's all right.
Yeah, she first time she meets Gibson, she sees that he's giving her kid a cigarette, so she like slaps the shit out of him.
Yeah.
So I think this is a little bit of like Gibson just trying to like make some peace with women here. Just like, oh, I see that you don't really like me right now, but trust me, women, I'm going to win you over by the end of this movie.
What women
you're going to be back on my side. Yeah. You will truly learn that I do know what women want by the time this movie's over.
I think what he was trying to let people know is that, you heard those explosive phone calls that he left, but that was a man who was pushed to a point.
I would imagine so.
I think he was in a real Johnny Depp situation.
Ooh, he's getting gaslit by some liar woman.
She was beating the shit out of him.
I could see that. Like from these phone calls, she does have some sort of like foreign accent.
Yeah.
Like she's some sort of foreigner.
Yeah.
You know how crazy these fucking like foreign fashion model chicks probably are?
Oh yeah, I've seen movies.
Probably was raised in some sort of like gulag or something.
Yeah.
She's never going back there, Matt. Going back there.
You know she stabbed him at least once.
I have no idea who this woman is, but just from hearing a couple seconds of the recording of her voice, I know that she's stabbed people.
He's like, you think you can shove me around and stab me because you're 6 foot tall and I'm 5'4"?
Yeah, that's probably a real thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Gibson, I think, is at least a few inches taller than the usual Hollywood celebrity actor guy, I would imagine.
Know,
in my head, he is. Yeah. Like, he's definitely at least like a head taller than a Tom Cruise. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, maybe a little bit, but he's Danny Glover towers over him.
So, yeah, that's my next couple bullets. Gibson and women. What the fuck is the fat lawyer sipping out of that plastic bag?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And then we get a big reveal. My next big plot point is, he killed my father!
Yep.
Sort of the Star Wars plot that sort of starts coming in here. Where Gibson's trying to figure out who's in charge of this fucking jail. So he's hitting up the little kid for info. Turns out Javi, the main guy, there's some mysterious shit going on with him. He blood tests everybody who comes in the jail. His goons knock down Gibson and take blood from him. The kid's special for some reason. They're protecting the kid like he's something special. The kid reveals that he wants to kill Javi because this guy killed his fucking father. And this is when Gibson is like, don't worry, I'm going to help you. Here's my sniper tattoo, just so you know that I can help you.
You got to have one. 5'10".
5'10"?
That's what they're claiming.
So you know he's at least 5'8". 5'8",
5'9".
I'm going to give a couple inches lower than what they're claiming on the internet.
Yeah.
That's not a tall man, but I'm going to say, like, what are we thinking Tom Cruise is? Like a 5'5"?
Oh, they list him as 5'6".
Yeah, right. Keep dreaming, Tom Cruise.
So there's that.
Keep dreaming, buddy.
You know, I'm going to start telling people I'm Mel Gibson tall.
Mm-hmm.
I feel good about that.
Might as well. So yeah, he killed my father. We're going to come to learn later that the whole reason he's...
I said he killed my father!
Treating this kid specialist because this kid's got the same weird blood type as he does. And this guy's got bad kidneys.
Hobby.
He needs kidney transplants. So he's harvesting organs from these fucking people who come in here.
Kidney, yeah.
This kid's his ticket to immortality. It's a real weird fucking plot line for just like a jail movie, but I kind of dig it.
Yeah.
Like takes it in a different direction than you usually get in these jail type movies.
Yeah. It gave us purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I liked it.
I got a bullet point about the camera work in this movie, which is pretty kinetic, which usually a big sticking point for me that I don't like. A lot of handheld stuff in here. We're moving around a lot during the normal shots. We are getting a decent amount of editing from angle to angle when simple things are happening. However, I don't mind it in this movie.
Yeah.
It's not too terrible. It's not so shaky that I'm getting a headache. I'm never losing track of the spatial relations of where things are because of the editing.
That's a good point.
I think they pulled off this sort of early 2000s style, ground level
Fast and Furious.
Yeah, fucking thing that was happening for a while. A lot better than action movies of this era usually
like Fast and Furious.
We can tell that this guy who directed the movies fucking actually maybe went to film school or something and has a little bit of an idea how to keep these things coherent.
It's no Bad Boys 2.
It is no Bad Boys 2. Thank Christ.
Yeah. No, that's a good point you make. It's pretty crazy with the camera work, but I never
The close-ups
was once
don't get like too egregious where you're just like, "Oh, why am I just seeing a nose shaking around and nothing else?"
They do a really good job of of using the camera to actually convey how busy
we do
and how claustrophobic the little village is.
Yeah, I do get a little bit of that early 2000s obsession with color filters where everything set in Mexico has got to have a yellow tint to it for no reason, which is not as bad as fucking Traffic or something, but
everything's blue.
Yeah, it's just it does sort of date the movie as being from the fucking era it was shot in because of just aesthetically how it looks throughout.
Looper had a little bit of the blue movie.
Yeah, definitely did.
A little bit of that Blue Monday. So what's up now? He's like, I gotta do this, I gotta do that. He gets the kid involved.
Lucha Libre happens.
Oh, yeah, Lucha Libre.
A day where just the luchadors come and put on a show in the middle of the jail.
We got a Blue Demon Jr.
Yeah, Demon Jr. showing up. Of course, that politicking motherfucker is going to get his face up here somehow if there's a Hollywood movie shooting in Mexico.
He's going to be in it.
But yeah, this is where the kid's mom creeps up behind Gibson and the kid as they're hanging out, and Gibson's taking cigarettes out of his mouth instead of putting them in. So she's like, wait a second.
Maybe
I'm going to fuck this Mel Gibson character. At first I hated his guts, but now I think I'm probably going to end up fucking him.
I live in a prison. I don't have to worry about him leaving me crazy voicemails.
Is there no cell phones in this movie? I guess we weren't
I think some people have phones.
And I'm sure they do.
Like
that's what I'm saying. But At no point is there a plot line like get me a cell phone or anything like in this jail.
I need a burner phone.
Seems like that would have came up in 2012, but no, it doesn't come up in this movie at all.
Hey, little kid, I need a burner phone.
Gibson's not trying to call anybody. I guess he's burnt all his bridges, this character.
No one wants to talk to him. So, but the cops want to talk to him. Mm-hmm. They come talk to him.
Okay, so there's an idiot underboss and a fat underboss. These guys become plot lines later on here. The fat guy is the main guy's brother. The idiot guy is the sort of loose cannon, the
He's
fucking
their cousin.
Yeah. And then the big plot point happens here with the Rolex watch.
Yeah.
Where fucking somebody finds the watch on the kid. It gets back to them that he stole the watch, which means that, like, fucking cousins, just like, that means he's responsible for stealing my money.
Yeah.
So then he, like, flips off the handle and goes and tries to beat the shit out of the kid, even though he knows the kid's under strict protection. And this is where the dominoes start falling into place, to where we're no longer just hanging out in this jail. We got a story happening.
Right. So the shitty shithead cousin that's a loser.
Yeah, he's all the sort of guy with bejeweled butts, like jeans with a bejeweled butt.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys.
He's all like, we need to be doing this. We need to be doing that. I'm great. And his family's like, you're nuts. Like, you can't be doing none of that. Like, you need to cool
your jets.
You're
just the idiot that people let hang around because you're related to us. And all us Mexican people care about our families way too much.
He gets
this is generally a huge downfall.
He gets in heat with his one cousin, Javi's brother, because Mel Gibson and the kids stole his money, but they can't figure out who stole the money. But then he remembers the watch, and then he's like, oh wait, shit, yeah, I'm gonna go fuck this little kid up. And then the fucking brother shows up being like, hey,
what are you doing?
You can't kill that kid.
That's the one kid you can't kill.
Like, it's
in
the
this
one
whole place.
Rule we have here is you can't kill that kid. And he's like, I'm on so many drugs and booze, I'll kill whoever. You're a pussy.
Definitely cocained out of his mind at this point.
Yeah.
Tries to fucking kill his cousin, who's the guy that's got him set up with an awesome job in this jail. But Mel Gibson remembers his toilet gun. He runs and gets it and comes and he kills this cousin guy and is like, hey, I just saved your life, bro. Now let me join your gang and be one of your crime mates.
Kind
of. Smart. He's always thinking, this Mel Gibson. He's always climbing the ladder. He's always finding the angle.
Because
he's a real Cole Cash type, Matt.
Yeah, yeah.
Did that character do any grifting? I just remember him shooting guns. He was never working any angles in those Image comics, was he?
You need to read the original run of Team 7 to really understand.
Right? Okay, that's when the grifter character was at his most pure.
And then I want you to follow that up with the entire original run of Wetworks.
Is that the prequel to let you know how Team 7 came together, or is it the other way around?
No, Wetworks was another team, much like the Wildcats. While you're at it,
this is all Image Comics.
Read Gen 13 as well.
I remember Gen 13 having a lot of ridiculously pervy art from what I remember. It was just like a really, a lot of really buxom, like 14-year-old girls was the characters in that one. Gross. I'll check it out.
Like, that's the whole reason that Supergirl or Power Girl was choked out by her own titties a decade later.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they ever fixed those.
She didn't need to get them fixed. They were perfect.
She's good? No. Yeah. Well, good for her. So they're like, I guess you can hang out in our gang, bro. You seem to have purpose.
Yeah.
They're like, maybe we're going to kill him. Maybe we'll keep him around.
Not. We got a love-hate thing going with the white guy now.
So he's all like, I don't know.
He does some fast talking here, too, because the main guy, Javi, is like, I'm going to fucking kill you. You killed my cousin. He's like, whoa. Your cousin was going to kill your meal ticket, this fucking organ farm you got over here. Yeah. He's going to kill your brother. I saved your brother. Like, I saved your brother. That means I saved you. Like, if anything, you fucking owe me money now, man.
I saved everybody, bro. Like, you're welcome.
So they're like, all right, I don't really like it, but I guess maybe we'll let you in.
They're like, whoa, what about this money we heard about? And he's like, I, earlier in the movie, memorized the cops' badges.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the cops. And he's and Javi's like, oh, we know those idiots.
We know
they're on the take.
This is fucking Mexico, man.
Yeah.
These people are all our cousins, too.
He's like, tell you what, I'll send out a couple guys to kill those cops.
Mm-hmm. So this is where we first meet Peter Stormare.
Mm-hmm.
Because we find out that Peter Stormare, the person who originally had this money, has already sent some guys out to kill these fucking cops to get his money back. They're cutting off old not Cheech Marin's toes while webcasting with Peter Stormare. And he's all like, I don't know about the 4 million, man. All there is 2 million. Like, we spent some of it on hookers and cars, but like, it's all here.
Yeah, it's an IOU. Stormare's just like, as good as money.
Stormare's like, cut off some more of his toes, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. But then
there was more monies. I'm Peter Stormare.
Javi's men come in and kill fucking Peter Stormare's men. So now he's like, what the fuck are you doing killing my men? And you're taking my money and killing my men.
Yeah.
Now I got beef with Javi. So now we got like conflicting fucking gang member type guys, yeah, who are all, and Mel Gibson's mixed up with all of them. And we just got all sorts of swirling crime going on in this movie, man.
So many crimes. It's a mess of crimes.
This is where we get some Wild West shit where Frank, that's Stormare's character's name,
yeah,
just sends some like badass fucking dudes with a bunch of guns into the jail just to kill everybody.
Right.
And it all happens on the main drag where all the taco stands and shit are.
Yep.
Shit's going down in slow motion. People's like eyes are all squinty. It's like a fucking spaghetti western all of a sudden.
At least one of those guys that comes in this scene is Mel Gibson's son.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
Is, did he have any sort of black marks on his record? He scream at anybody or say anything racist? Maybe we can just have Mel Gibson's son start being in things, and we don't necessarily need Mel Gibson to come back.
I'd say give it time.
Okay.
Give it time.
Probably.
So they come in, they know who to pay, and they get, you know, carte blanche where they can just walk in there and shoot the place up.
Mm-hmm.
Like they, because there are armed guards, like prison guards,
yeah,
in towers.
But this is just a money-making scheme. Yeah. This isn't really anything to do with security.
Well, right. So they pay off the cops.
Make sure money's getting to the right people here.
To be like, look, these guys have to kill a couple people. Need you to turn a blind eye.
Just let them in so they could do it. And this is a really cool action scene. I think maybe my favorite of the fucking movie.
Hell yeah.
Shit's just popping off. We got like security guards up on turrets with like sniper rifles. Mel Gibson and old fat underboss are like diving around shooting people.
Yeah.
These guys, I think they got like a bazooka, at least got some grenades. There's a lot of machine guns going on here. Everything's blowing up. The little kid and the kid's mom are like being put in danger. They're ducking behind walls. It's like an old Western shootout, but like with added grenades and shit.
Right.
Which is cool as fuck.
Because what do we get?
Well, we get that slow-mo scene where Gibson fucking, which is, okay, so like,
the coolest?
The one guy throws a grenade in the direction of the kid and the kid's mom. So Gibson's like, oh shit, I got a slow-mo run at this grenade.
Luckily, I got a sniper eye.
Yeah, he does a dramatic slow-mo dive and like he grabs it in midair and then throws it back at this guy.
And it's awesome.
And it explodes at the perfect time. So like the guy
just
disintegrates
turns
entirely.
Just the Thanos snap.
It's super fucking awesome. Like it's very dramatic, very slow motion, very violent and big. I have one quibble with it. Where for some reason I thought instead of grabbing it, he was about to flip upside down and Pele kick it, which would have been super fucking insane.
Yeah.
And I just thought like the whole fucking Mexico setting or shit. For some reason, I was like, is he gonna fucking Pele kick that grenade?
You're still just tied up at that Lucha Libre match, weren't
you? I think
you?
A little bit, yeah. There were some acrobatics going on, so in the moment, I was a little bit disappointed. I think maybe if they had it to do over and they would have heard me talking about that, they'd been like, yeah, we probably should have had his old ass flip
should
upside down.
Should we have 60-year-old Mel Gibson Pele kick a grenade back at a guy?
I think it'd be a good idea.
Yeah, they should have. You live, you learn. So now what?
There's obviously a problem now where Javi and Frank are in a full-on gang war. So Gibson,
but he's completely won himself over with Javi's brother.
Yeah,
now,
and this is where,
who was originally on the fence.
He negotiates his way out of the fucking jail where he's like, listen, man, you got problems with this Frank guy because you got his money.
Yeah.
You keep that money. Just let me go kill Frank.
He's mad at me. I'm the one that took his money, bro.
All I need is some guns, a car, and just a little bit of walking around money. I'll get the fucking job
folding money, we call that.
In the jail, or just like, that's what you call it, where you come from?
Where I come
from. The hood you're from.
Yes.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So what happens? You know, Javi's pulling all the strings. He's fucking in charge of this jail, even though he's...
Yeah.
He's one of the captors, technically. But he's very rich. He's got, like, his whole sectioned-off version with, like, fancy restaurants and hot tubs and shit.
Yeah.
This guy's super living the life. Like, if I could live in a jail, like, protected around with security guards
that's
and shit,
how you wanna do
and
it.
Also just have, like, he's got, like, a harem of women and, like,
yeah. He has like casino night.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome.
It's pretty nice.
I would much rather be living in this Mexican jail as one of the like rich guys than living here in the United States.
That's fair.
Just going to work every day and shit. Ugh.
I could see.
Hate it.
Wearing a bathrobe like that guy. Just kind of.
Yeah, that's right, too. He's fucking Hugh Hefner in Around.
Yeah.
Which there's a Hugh Hefner joke in this thing where he calls him Hugh Hefe.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's pretty
solid.
Solid
joke right there. It's a good joke. Gave me a legit laugh.
It's a good joke. That's why Gibson got that writing credit.
Uh-huh.
It's for that joke right there.
Slowly winning me over, Mel, you charming scamp.
You old son of a gun. And one of the other things that's going on while they're like, we got to go kill Frank, the warden. He shows up and he's like, Javi, like, I'm getting some heat.
Oh, yeah.
From the
Federales, from the man.
Yeah. Like, you got to tone it down.
I want to shut this place down because it turns out it's not a very conducive to law and order setup we've got running here.
And Javi's just like, I got an idea. How about you get the fuck out of my face? Mm-hmm. The grown-ups are talking. Mm-hmm. They're like, you believe this fucking guy?
Also, his fat brother is sort of like, hey, you might want to stop smoking and drinking so much
because
that liver's on its last legs, man.
Yeah, we can only get so many livers.
We got a ticking clock with the liver going. We got a ticking clock with the government wanting to come in and shut this place down. Like, it's all coming to a head.
Yeah.
But Gibson does get out, and he gets back over the border in a little fucking beater with a trunk full of fucking guns and shit.
Right.
So... A little side quest here, I think, to put it in the parlance of nerd games or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Gibson's going to kill Peter Stormare.
First things first, he immediately notices he has a tail, because you don't get anything past this
That's
guy.
That's right, uh-huh.
And he's like, gonna have to do something about this.
Aren't these just like a couple of Javi's goons, where he's like, once this guy kills Peter Stormare, just kill him, and then like we're done with all of it?
Yeah, that's what it is. So he... does the old Axel Foley banana in the tailpipe on these guys when they stop at a gas station.
He legitimately does that. It's not just a turn of phrase you're using here. He fucking stuffs their fucking tailpipe full of, like, I don't know, some Cheetos or something.
Yeah. And then waits for their car to break down.
Which is weird. He sort of has himself set up with a sniper rifle. Like, I know it's going to be exactly here where their car breaks down.
Well, he's
and they
done
have to
this before,
over.
You know?
Sure.
And he
got it down to a science.
He murders them. He just executes them.
It is Martin Riggs style, like just fucking long range sniper rifle shit. He takes them down real easy. No longer has a tail.
Just
fucking
free
done.
To go about his
done,
business.
Done. Back to come up with a plot with how I'm going to have Frank killed, which seems like Frank's just like a rich guy hanging around. He probably could just drive up to his house and like sniper rifle him or something. But he's like, instead, I'm going to create a very complicated...
Elaborate ruse. First thing I got to do...
Involving another character that's going to be very confusing, because you think he's involved with the rest of the movie in some way at first, but then you realize he's not at all. There's no reason for him to be in this movie.
He's like, I'm going to get the guy that's the head of this shipping conglomerate, who's got a lot of money.
I'm going to trick him into thinking I'm Clint Eastwood.
Right. He has a whore call up the shipping guy.
Some great back and forth between this big whore and Mel Gibson. They had an easy chemistry, these two.
Yeah.
You give these two a sitcom and I'm watching it.
Where they're like, oh, Mel Gibson, you are found guilty for calling a cop sweet tits and saying mean things on the phone. So for community service, you have to live with this real life whore.
Sure. Just, we're going to make you... pal around with a heavy set ethnic woman and see if you can
you
learn
have
to love
be
her.
Her butler. So he gets this streetwalker to pretend to be his secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Kaufman, Clint Eastwood is on the line.
Hello?
Hold for Mr. Eastwood, please.
Hey, how you doing?
Thanks for taking my call, sir.
Well, it's quite a surprise, Mr. Eastwood. I'm a fan of your work.
This is bullshit! You know what, man? Excuse me for a minute, sir. This is not what you said.
Okay, now that's better.
Okay, move
that's
on.
Better. That's good. So you all right, man?
Yeah.
You all right? Ah, hallelujah to you! Woo!
God!
All right, set up for take two.
Sorry, sir, I'm working stiff. You gotta make your time where you can.
And then he does this.
Then we get to
awesome...
see Mel Gibson's Clint Eastwood impression.
Now, was this like an inside joke, do you think?
I don't know why this is in the movie, but this is clearly something just very precious that Mel Gibson needed to put in a movie for some reason.
And it's great.
Because there's no reason for any of this shit to have anything to do with Clint Eastwood.
Except it's awesome.
He convinces this shipping conglomerate guy that he's Clint Eastwood, and Clint Eastwood wants to, like, fucking touch base with him, and they need to have a meeting.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm doing this thing for charity. It's a great, you should do it too. I'm going to tell you all about it in a meeting.
So this guy's like, yes, I believe that you're Clint Eastwood because your fucking spot on impression is clearly just the real Clint Eastwood.
It's just Mel Gibson going, my name's Clint Eastwood.
Which, yeah.
I'm making movies.
Which is what Clint Eastwood is. You just describe Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
So they've got a meeting for 10 a.m. in this guy's beautiful high-rise office the next morning. First part of the plan done here.
Yeah. Now he's just got to get old Frank.
Second part is he convinces Frank's dude that now he's not Clint Eastwood. Now he's this shipping guy. And he's like, I'm this shipping guy. I could really help you move a lot of drugs.
I heard you guys do drugs.
Why don't you?
I want to do drugs.
Come to my high-rise office tomorrow at 10 so we can have a meeting about drug stuff. I think we could all make a lot of money doing this shit together. I'm Clint Eastwood, just doing impressions, wearing snazzy outfits. He's in like tweed suits at this point for no reason.
Yeah, he looks great. And so finally the meeting happens for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
After Peter Stormare's partying with those
A scene where Stormare's back at his mansion. This is what I'm saying. Like, he's just like, he's also Hugh Hefner in it, just like in a bathrobe, snorting coke, partying with whores. Yeah. I'm like, you're fucking special forces sniper. Just park at the hill next to his house and fucking shoot through the windows.
Right.
But no, he's got other ideas. Mel Gibson's got other ideas.
So he's got this whole big plan, and he's like, here we go. I'm going to get to the meeting first. I'm going to say that I'm the one guy.
Clint Eastwood's associate, who's, I don't know, apparently Clint Eastwood, and we're supposed to believe.
Right, yeah.
Has like a 57-year-old man as his assistant. Yeah, right. Clint Eastwood has an assistant. She's a fucking smoking hot 24-year-old girl. Yeah. Like, never been to Hollywood before? This is how this shit rolls.
And she...
Every assistant in Hollywood is either a 24-year-old gay guy or a 22-year-old smoking hot college girl.
Yeah.
This is exclusively. There's no other assistants in Hollywood.
You're either banging her or getting secret gay blowjobs that you don't tell anybody about.
Yeah, depending on which corner of Hollywood you're coming from.
Right.
The Bryan Singer corner or the Harvey Weinstein corner.
Right, right.
We should do a sort of like draft. We have like the Weinstein division, the Singer division. This could be good. All the perverts from Hollywood.
Spacey,
We'll get them going. See who it's our favorite one is.
That'd be good. Next March Madness, next year.
We got a theme going.
All right, so he's like, hey, you know, I'm here for Clint Eastwood. You'll hear him coming. He's got a helicopter. He's always really loud. So he's already like, hey, I'm going to blow some shit up.
A lot of little jabs at Eastwood, too, here. These clearly just two old white Republicans elbowing each other and doing a little fucking ribbon going on right here.
A lot of people don't know this, but Clint Eastwood stole that talking to a chair Obama bit from Gibson. Something Gibson.
Another one of the unreleased Mel Gibson tapes.
Yeah. Also has a lot of the N-word in it.
He paid a lot of money to have that one buried, but not before him and Eastwood had a good laugh about
Eastwood's
it.
Eastwood's like, well, you took a shot at me and get the gringo, and now take a shot at you.
Yeah, tit for tat.
Tit for tat.
Funny, these guys.
He goes up there pretending to be Eastwood's assistant. He gets there, and old boy's like, oh, hey, you must be Clint Eastwood's assistant. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, why don't I just chloroform you and put you in the bathroom, and then I'm going to pretend to be you.
Which he does.
So he does.
Works out great. Peter Stormare and his lawyer show up, and then he's like, hey, I'm shipping magnate.
I'm Billy Shippenhouse.
Why don't you go over there and look at that painting on the other side of the room by the windows, and I'm going to throw a hand grenade at you.
Yeah.
Which he does. A couple hand grenades.
Right.
And then the whole office explodes as he, like, dives into the fucking bathroom as well.
And then re-knocks out Billy Shippenstein.
So Peter Stormare's dead because he exploded, and then his exploding body flew out of a fucking, like, 30-story fucking window.
Right.
So Gibson just coolly struts out
with an umbrella.
With an umbrella up because...
You never know if it's going to rain.
It's the sprinklers are going because there was an explosion. Yeah. He's very smooth, very slick here. This con man character, I feel like setting up for a prequel where we see him doing all his like cons before everything went wrong for him, maybe.
Yeah.
I would have bought it. Too bad you didn't make any money off this thing, Mel. I was on your side.
So he's like, well, that's all done. Just going to go back to Mexican
prison. Meanwhile, at the jail, the kid's mom pulls a Jack move here where she sees there's doctors being brought in. So she's like, oh, shit. They want my son's liver. I better go hide him in the little, like, hovel behind a wall that I've got fucking planned for when they try to cut this liver out of my kid's body.
Right.
So then Javi's like, where's your kid? She's like, not giving him up. So we got a cool scene where she's like tied up and being tortured.
Right. Then what happens? Why does she give him up? I don't remember.
She doesn't. The kid gives himself up.
Oh, that's right.
Because he grabs his little shiv that he's planning to kill Javi with. And he's like, hey, you want my liver, motherfucker? Stab, stab, stab. Starts stabbing his own fucking liver. And I'm like, oh, shit, this kid's playing three-dimensional chess.
Yeah.
So now we got to get Javi and the kid into, like, emergency surgery. The fucking mom's just, like, tied up and screaming. And this is when Mel Gibson rolls back into the jail like a hero at the exact same time that the government's coming in with SWAT teams to shut this place down. Everything's coming to a head all at once.
Oh, he already confronted the embassy consulate guy.
Oh, yeah, we get a scene where this guy's, a real fun scene, where this guy's paying some hookers to, like... He's paying the one to eat really hot peppers that are, like, painful to her, and paying the other one to, like, wax his back, which is making him scream.
Yeah.
Some real kinky-ass shit going on here.
And Mel Gibson's like, I got the drop on you. I'm going to steal your badge, and I'm going to pay these prostitutes to kill you
slowly.
That's
right. That's how he gets back in the jail, is just posing as this fucking embassy guy.
And he just waltzes right in.
He does.
Works out great.
Works out great.
The doctor's got the kid and Javi on the operating table, and he's like, great news, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out this kid's just a fucking dumb kid.
He doesn't even
know
where
our liver is.
He's
so.
Stabbing other places.
So the liver's fine.
The liver's fine. This liver I'm holding right here. Like, she's holding it up in the air. It's like,
look at it.
It's pristine liver.
Yeah.
Time to put it in your body.
And so it's like, okay, everything's good to go. Or is it?
No, because Gibson's fucking here, and he's having a standoff. He's like, put that liver back in the kid's body.
I don't care if there's a police raid. I was going to steal my money and leave, but the bond with me and this kid, it's too strong. Mm-hmm. I'm a changed man.
Mm-hmm.
So he's all like, I got to save the kid. And well, he does.
Because,
I mean, he does.
What happens is, like, the doctor girl turns on the bad guys in some way. I don't remember how this happens. There's, like, a Mexican standoff, and then she, like...
Yeah, what is it?
She pulls a gun on him and is just like, oh, I don't think so, man. But
they're
then
like,
she was just
psyching,
and then she, like, shoots the fat underboss or whatever.
Right.
And then Gibson's like, you're on my side. Thanks, lady. Sew up this kid and let's get him the fuck out of here.
And then he sneaks out of the jail by being like, hey, I'm white. I'm clearly a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, probably. You probably are. So that's how he gets out.
Mm-hmm.
They just get on an ambulance.
In an ambulance.
Yeah.
They drive out. We get like a mega happy ending here where Gibson goes back to his impounded car and finds that extra $2 million, which he has.
He's got,
like,
the false bottom in the trunk.
Yeah, fucking, like, welded in the bottom of the trunk or something. So him and the kid's mom are now rich. They're living on a beach. He's banging the kid's mom now. That all came to a head. We knew that was coming.
He says he's trying to speak Spanish to her, and he's like, I want to bite you.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, did he... like, say something the wrong way, and then she's just like, that's fine, you can bite me. And it's like, well, it's weird dialogue.
People are nibbling on each other. You never fucking...
It's weird dialogue.
Never been in a relationship with a kid's mom before? There's the type of shit that happens, Matt.
No, but I got a Mexican
women
lady.
Are starving for attention.
She gets mad when I bite her.
She's a germaphobe.
Oh, that's what it is.
Also, we get a fun little scene where Gibson's ex-wife and her new dude get murdered by...
Oh, Reginald T. Barnes.
Mexican fucking cartel guys, because he was giving everybody this guy's name everywhere he went, so they're trying to kill Gibson, but it's just this guy who fucking
gets
wet.
It's his old partner that he hates.
The lesson is sort of like, hey, crime pays... But then we get some more voiceover for Gibson where he's like, I don't want the lesson of this movie to be that crime pays.
Yeah.
But then it does. Like, he's got a nice little family in a beach hut with $2 million.
He gives that little speech and he's like, I know it's going to catch up to me at some point, but until then, fuck it.
I don't know. You killed all your enemies.
He seemed good.
I think you were clever enough to pull it off. Thank you, Mel Gibson. I'm going to get into a life of crime now.
I think what he's saying was... I'm clearly going to get into some shit
later. You know, eventually I'm going to say something racist again, and you're going to want to throw me out of Hollywood again.
Again.
But, do we really want to keep going through this rigmarole over and over? That's, come on, people. Just live and let live.
It's more so on you, people, at this point, not him.
Really, every time you point your finger at Mel Gibson, you're pointing two fingers back at yourself.
And one up at God.
And one up at God, and who God's also, I'm sure, Mel Gibson's has side. A recording of him saying the N-word somewhere at the point.
He created everything. Yeah, that means he created that word.
You want somebody to blame.
Yeah, you want somebody to be upset at.
Blame your Christian God.
Also, why are you quarantined right now?
Probably because there's gay people in the world and we're being punished.
That's right.
Okay.
God's cleansing
that's
the world.
That's usually what it means.
Shame on you for going against his will. It's in the Bible.
And shame on us for talking so long about Get the Gringo. I'm exhausted. We need to take a break here.
Okay.
You need to break the listeners so we can finish this thing up strong.
Yep. You guys can listen to some Coming Attractions. We're going to listen to some Tool.
And then Judgment Day.
Missing link tattoo.
Dad.
I'm here.
I need cash fast.
Yes, I am dead.
Just stay put till I get there.
See, my boyfriend, he got shot. There are a lot of people looking for me.
How long you been doing this? Tell me the truth.
You found her.
She's coming down hard off something.
Get her into detox.
I just met the girl for the first time in years. I just don't feel like handing her over to a bunch of strangers.
Want that too?
I'm not open.
I'm so sorry.
It's good to meet your friends.
Boys picked the wrong rednecks.
Come on, man, let's go.
I got no idea how you piss guys like that off. What do they want from you?
They worked for my boyfriend. Please don't hurt her. I killed him.
Lydia Carson could be traveling with John Lake.
That warrant is for me. You could go home.
You got raised by three stepfathers. Should have been me.
I'm a murderer.
And you'll face God for it. But not yet.
Go. Oh, my God.
People get caught when they make mistakes. You stick with me. I'll give you everything I got.
I can see you right now.
She's the last streak of sunlight you're gonna see. Whatever you're gonna do with Lydia? First, you need to deal with me. Don't move.
There's an issue with the bus you made.
How long is this suspension?
6 weeks. No pay.
Yesterday, I was a cop. Today, I'm a poor civilian. We have no right to compensation.
I'm sort of okay with the idea.
Who the hell are those guys?
Things are getting weird.
We're heading into new territory.
Start the party.
There's a lot of imbeciles out there.
So when I was banging how tall Mel Gibson was,
yeah,
I think you'd be interested to know that people also search for Mark Wahlberg's height.
Okay, that's got to be a short one. I don't picture him as being taller than a Mel Gibson.
What do you think?
I'm going to say 5'9".
5'8".
That means he's like 5'6".
Now again, these are all the names that come up.
I'm going pro wrestling laws, each one of these has to at least be a couple inches embellished.
Yeah. So when you search for Mel Gibson's height, people also search Mark Wahlberg, who's 5'8". Mm-hmm. Danny Glover.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go 6 even.
6'4".
Oh, wow.
Tom
should have been in the NBA.
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise is definitely 5'2".
It's 5'7" they got.
He's Warwick Davis tall.
See, this has got to be off because next one's Sylvester Stallone.
Okay, I'm going to put him head to head with Mark Wahlberg, I think. I think those guys are looking eye to eye.
That's where I would say, but they got him as 5'10" with Gibson. I just don't see it.
No way.
Are they in that Expendables movie together?
They're in Expendables 3, which I don't think I made it up to 3 after the first two were so terribly boring. Goldie Hawn feet comes up when you search for Mel Gibson height. That's weird. I don't know.
That's a different thing I was looking at. Joe Pesci, 5'4".
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Willis. Mm-hmm. Bruno's a 6 foot.
Bruno's
flat. So they say.
I don't know about that.
John Lithgow.
Oh, John Lithgow's got to be 7 feet. If the rest of these guys are up there, John Lithgow's 7 feet tall.
7'8".
Oh, wow.
You're close. And the last one, Oksana Grigorieva.
What is that? Some sort of like Olympic athlete?
I think that's the lady he was yelling at on the phone.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's definitely got to be 6 inches taller than him, I would imagine.
They got her as 2 inches shorter, 5'8". I'm not buying it.
That's definitely out of her heels then.
Yeah. Good call.
Judgment Day is where we take the movies that we watch and we decide how we feel about them, how we rank them, how we rate them. First, though, we go out to the internet and we see what you thought about them, and we let you, the people, try to sway our votes one way or another.
You folks, that's what we do it for.
So I got a couple of one-bullet reviews here, people who hated the Get the Gringo. I got a couple of five-bullet reviews, people who love the Get the Gringo. Mm-hmm. We'll read these, and then we'll make our fucking snap decisions here. Matt, my first one-bullet review is from a Letterboxd user named Bicycle Mark.
Okay.
Mel Gibson took a break from yelling at his wives and hating groups of humans to scribble a screenplay, and this is what came out. It's like Fletch meets The Rock meets Desperado, only with none of the good aspects of those movies and all the shit. I give it 1 star for scenery. I like the concept of the corrupt Mexican prison, cartoonish as it might have turned out, still a fun place. Plus there's a Lucha Libre night.
Very fun.
One bullet from Letterboxd user Bicycle Mark. He still seems to be holding a little bit of a grudge over Mel Gibson for that phone call he made. This next one bullet review
was in an internment camp.
Is from a Letterboxd user named SM Ridgely 74. We'll see if they judge the movie on its own merits or if there's some more Mel Gibson griping here. SM Ridgely 74 says, good car stunt. Pipe roll through a fence. Nice. Annoying Gibson voiceover throughout entire film. Had me quite interested for first half, bank robber jailed in Mexican prison, corrupt cops and governor, but then it get complicated with bankers, businessmen, Gibson have to pretend to be Clint Eastwood. Question mark after that. He's got a question mark in parentheses.
No questions. There's no question.
A backstory about a kid being kept alive just for his liver to be transplanted into the gov in a race against time to stop it couldn't save it. Too late, got bored, and wished for those days when Gibson told us about eating a bullet. He even had a special bullet for the occasion with a hollow point to make sure it blew the back out of his goddamned head out and do the job right. Every single day he wake up and think of a reason not to do it. Every single day. You know why? This is gonna make you laugh. It's a job. Doing the job. Ah, we miss you, Riggs. One bullet from Letterboxd user SM Ridgely 74.
I'd like to call up that guy and leave him a strongly worded voicemail.
Wow. Positive, like supporting him? Like,
oh, that's all I do.
Like what you're doing out there.
That's all I do, Nate.
Matt, those were the one bullet reviews. People who weren't so into Get the Gringo. Also, I've got some five bullet reviews here.
From some real Americans.
Real Americans. First real American here is a... Paulina Kanopka.
Yeah, that's as American as it gets.
Five bullet review from Look, IMDb user Paulina Kanopka.
Even Oksana's sister agrees with Mel Gibson. It was like, bitch pushed him.
I watched it. I loved it. It's brilliant. I will watch it again and again and again. I couldn't give a shit about Mel's personal life and the crazy media surrounding it because, quite frankly, the man is phenomenal in his work. Isn't this what we should really care about? And since when does his personal life hurt people in any way? Surely people have said bad things when no one is around, eh? Exactly. This was a badass film. I watched it because I was curious and because of Mel Gibson, as I am an all-time fan. And I have to say, from screenplay to a great storyline to the fantastic directing to all the actors, main and supporting, and to the film altogether, I am happy to have watched it and enjoyed it. Hollywood, this is how it's done. Mel, you are a legendary. Live long, live strong. Five bullets from Paulina Kanapka.
I support that.
Like, man, that's pretty high on Get the Gringo so far.
No, she gets it. He should be celebrated for his work, you know?
I agree entirely.
Nobody gets on Colonel Sanders for fighting for the Confederates.
One more person who's able to separate the man from the work here is an IMDb user, webmoney_UK. Five bullet review here. Mel Gibson at his best funny thing is someone let a retail copy of his film out before because it's in the cinemas. I wonder how that could be, Illuminati. Please go watch his new film in the cinemas and enjoy. I hope you people are not put off by Mel's rants. He could be right. There is a party that owns the media and will try their best to make you see what they want you to see. Please go and make your own mind up. Let's see if this is censored. I don't think it will see the light of day. Think outside the box. Also, go rent his other films. Hope you like the film. IMDb is a good site. Just run by Illuminati. That's all more to come out now. Five bullets from IMDb user webmoney_UK, who's never saw a punctuation mark he wanted to use.
I'm not commenting on that last review.
Because you don't want to get on the bad side of the Illuminati?
I don't want my mom killed. I don't know how it works.
Tell you what, people out here on the internet, these Illuminati people, ooh, it's the Illuminati, Illuminati. Wouldn't you want to, like, join the Illuminati? They're all like, get rid of the Illuminati. I'm like, Illuminati, let me in the Illuminati.
They kill the one person you love.
And for you, it's your sweet, sweet mama?
I'm just going off of what, you know, Kanye had to go through.
Oh, I didn't even know Kanye's mom was killed. I thought she was just like a college professor.
No, she died of fake breast cancer.
Oh, that sucks.
The Illuminati killed her.
I fucking probably droned a cancer capsule right into that chick's titty.
I'm going to send you
2,000 miles away.
The 60-minute YouTube documentary I watched on the Illuminati.
Oh, this isn't all Kanye fanfic you've been writing?
Nope. This is a real thing I watched in prison.
Okay. One of the inmates slip it to you like, hey, I think you're ready.
No,
I think you're ready to see the truth.
Worse, another officer.
Oh, no.
These
people are in the government, ladies
Lauren
and gentlemen.
Lauren Hill lost a very good friend and then was like, I don't even want to be
she
in the Illuminati.
She crossed the Illuminati too?
Yeah.
So
I crossed them again on the way out, and that's why she's not successful anymore.
But Jay-Z and Beyonce are the Illuminati, right?
They're high-ranking members.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Taking out anybody who's more talented than them, apparently.
I'll send you the 60-minute YouTube
I have all the time in the world.
We'll put a link up.
Matt, that's what the people out there in the world are saying about Get the Gringo. What do you have to say about Get the Gringo? Let's hear your final thoughts and your ranking, your rating of this Mel Gibson film.
I kind of liked it.
Ooh.
All the flying and the magic.
Wow.
I liked the car crashes. I liked the bloods. I liked the shoot 'em ups.
Mm-hmm.
I liked his little relationship with that kid. I thought they were good. You know, that cigarette bit never got old to me.
Smoking with little kids. Always a good time.
I liked it. I liked it. I liked it. Mel Gibson was enjoyable. He was shooting people good.
Mm-hmm.
Action was good. I even liked his Clint Eastwood impersonation. The only thing...
Get this guy on SNL.
So the one thing I don't really like is that prison raid at the end. And
yeah, it seems like that could have been like much more of an action scene, but it's just happening in the background. Seems kind of useless that it's happening.
Yeah, it's all just... Everything else makes sense, and then the end of it's just kind of like shoehorned in there, and again, he just literally gets out of jail by being like... I'm a white guy. I'm a doctor. And they're like, yeah, you're white. You a doctor. Happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, it was still a lot of fun. I give it 3 bullets.
3 bullets. Okay.
Yeah, it was a good time.
I'm going to agree. I had a lot of fun with Get the Gringo. You want to put it up against fucking the other movies going on here. I don't think it's as well made a movie as Edge of Darkness. I think there's some better filmmaking going on in that. I think there's some better acting going on in that. Mm-hmm. However, there was big stretches where that movie was boring, and this movie is
boring.
This movie is entertaining all the way through.
Yep.
Never stops. Mel Gibson's playing a charming rogue instead of a sad, mean old man, which much more fitting for his talents, much better use of the Mel Gibson talents. The unique setting of the prison is fun. It's interesting.
It's its own character.
It's nice, yeah, it's a nice little way to go. The setting is the character. I've been telling people this for... People just won't listen.
No.
Just telling them over and over again.
I know how you are.
The twists and the double crosses, maybe just like more than this movie needs. Those are the sort of scenes where I start want to check out when I'm watching an action movie, but they don't get to the point where I like couldn't actually follow what was happening in this one. Like I always actually knew what was happening.
Yeah.
So that was okay. The little kid acting wasn't even annoying. Like the kid was fine.
Yeah.
So I think this is a great movie to throw on a Sunday when you're kind of hungover,
mm-hmm.
which is what I did. It's perfect for that. I like it a little bit more as an experience than Edge of Darkness. So I'm going 3.5 bullets.
Oh, look at you.
Get the Gringo.
Look at you. I like that.
Mel Gibson. I'm coming around on him a little bit.
He's doing great work.
Post-racist meltdown Mel Gibson.
If he was a real monster, could he have made the Beaver?
Jodie Foster supports him. She cast him in the Beaver. Jodie Foster couldn't be evil. She was Nell.
You know, she wrote that movie about her vagina.
Nell?
Siptown, whoopatay. Siptown, I wanna pay.
That about does it for week two of The Resurrection of Mel Gibson. But Matt,
I had to wait through so much of that movie just to watch her show up naked in town, like 2 hours in.
Jodie Foster's The Beaver. Or yes. Jodie Foster's Beaver, not Jodie Foster's The Beaver. One's a film, the other one's a body part. Very confusing.
They're two separate movies.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on next week?
Next week, we're moving on to Bloodfather.
Ooh.
Another Mel Gibson's having trouble with his kids movie, so look forward to that.
Apparently, was he leaving angry voicemails at his kids? Because he's always just being a bad dad in these movies, huh?
He's always, I think it's a, love's a two-way street. He's always being pretty good to these kids from what I can see, and they're kind of just like poo-pooing the idea that Mel Gibson's their dad.
I've also heard, Nate, that love is a battlefield. And for that, we say, hey, mm-hmm. it's Baby Blow and Blow.
Yeah.
Stay single.
It's a long road when you're on your own, and it hurts when they tear your dreams apart. And every new town just seems to bring you down. Trying to find peace of mind can break your heart. It's a friend.